The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille.
Welcome to Wine, Food, and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Listen in as we journey to some of Italy's most beautiful places in the company of those who know them best, the families who grow grapes and make fabulous wines. Through their stories, we'll learn not just about their wines, but also about their ways of life, the local and regional foods and specialities that pair naturally with their wines, and the most beautiful places to visit. We have a wonderful journey of discovery ahead of us, and I hope you will join me. Welcome to Wine, Food, and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Today we travel to Veneto, to the province of Treviso, north of Venice, and to the slopes of the Conegliano wine hills to meet my guest Giulia Castagnier, who will tell us a fascinating story of her family, Distilleria Castagnier. Buongiorno, Giulia. How are you today? Is it a beautiful day?
Actually, finally, it's a beautiful day. I'm based in Milano today because I live between Treviso and Milano and the sun is out. So it's a great day. I'm honored to be here. So thank you for having me.
Oh, we're very, very honored to have you with us. We're very pleased to learn the story of Castagnier. And I know it's a busy time for you. I know that Vinitaly is just around the corner, a few days from now, and you're going to be there. And I know that there's going to be a very special masterclass taking place on Tuesday, April 16th. And I look forward to hearing more about that and to talking about that. So Giulia, let's get started. You're between the Adriatic Sea and the Dolomites, north of Venice, in a very beautiful area. For our listeners, can you describe to me where you are, what the countryside looks like, the weather, so that we can transport our listeners to Italy, wherever in the world they may be, because our listeners come from all around the world.
Right. So as you said, we are 60 kilometers away from Venice and literally steps from the famous Prosecco Hills in Conegliano. The weather is always nice there. It's warm. And our land is historically devoted to wine and grappa making. So you have to make sure you come visit us because it's a beautiful, beautiful area.
Yeah, it's a really, really beautiful area. The Prosecco Conegliano Valdobbiadene wine hills are UNESCO cited, and they are some of the most beautiful wine lands in the world. And of course, you've got the mountains, the Dolomites rising behind. And you're not far from the sea, so it's a pretty, pretty ideal place to be, Giulia. Did you grow up there?
I grew up there. Then I moved to Milano, where I went to college, and then I went back there. But you know, it's beautiful to live there because it's very a human-sized city. So, and the landscape, as you said, it's beautiful. We are like 45 minutes from the seaside and 1 hour and a half from the Dolomites. So it's very enjoyable. It's a beautiful place to stay.
Okay. And it's where your family began the Distilleria Castagnera.
Yeah.
Can you tell us the story of how your family business began? The story of your father and the work he created.
Yeah, so my dad, first off, is an enologist. He studied in the prestigious Enological School of Conegliano that you've probably heard of. When he got the diploma, he started his career by chance in a distillery. I said by chance because he wanted to be a winemaker, but he applied for a job in a distillery, a famous distillery in our area. And he worked there for 20 years. He became a master distiller, we say mastro distillatore, so he learned there how to produce grappa. And in 20 years, he became the general manager of the company. Then in 1996, he was in his 40s, and he figured out that he had a different vision of what grappa could have been in the near future. So he was inspired by cognac, he always says that. And he decided to invest, acquire a distillery that was available on sale at that time, and to make his dream of innovating grappa come true. Nowadays, in less than 30 years, we are considered to be one of the most innovative grappa distillery, and of course, one of the biggest, since we produce the 13% of the total amount of grappa distilled in Italy.
My goodness, that's an enormous amount.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
So to give you grappa in numbers, to give you an idea of the numbers, the total production is 30 million bottles, okay? And we produce 4 million bottles of that 30 million bottles.
Okay, great. Now, it's still very much a family business, isn't it?
It is. So with my cousin, Carlo, and my brother, Giovanni, and my sister, Silvia, I represent the second generation of the family business. Actually, it was super easy for us to define and divide responsibility, because we were all interested in different aspects of the business. So I take care of sales and marketing. My sister is in charge of finance. My brother takes care of management control. And my cousin Carlo takes care of the production, because as my dad is an enologist, and my dad is still our CEO.
Okay, so that's great. A real family enterprise. Now, let's talk about grappa. And I'll tell you now, Giulia, that I absolutely love grappa, especially age grappa like Castagnera produced. So I'm excited to hear about how your family make it.
Yeah.
But I know that not everybody listening knows about grappa or thinks that they like it. This is our chance to change their perceptions. Let's start right at the beginning. What is grappa?
Okay, so grappa is a spirit made by distilling the grape skins. So the grape skins is called pomas. According to European community law, grappa can be applied only to the spirit distilled from Italian pomas, that we said it's the grape skins, within the Italian territory. So grappa is only Italian.
Okay, so grappa is made from the grape pomace. Just so our listeners are aware, that means that after the winemaking process, or in the case of white wines, the grapes are pressed.
Right.
And then the skin, the juice comes out, and you have this mass of skins left over. Or in the case of red wines, after the maceration on the skins and the fermentation, those wine-drenched grape skins are brought to the distillery. Is that right?
Right. We collect the grape skins from the winemakers to distill them and produce grappa.
Okay, and so in winemaking, grape varieties are very important. Are they very important for your grappa?
Yeah, of course. So we distill local varieties like Glera, which is the grape behind Prosecco. We also distill international, like Merlot, Cab, and Pinot Noir cultivated in Italy, which are blended in our aged grappa. But we also distill Sangiovese pomace from grape cultivated in Montalcino for our grappa di Brunello, or the pomace collected from wineries in Valpolicella for our Amarone grappa. So it works pretty much like the wine. If you want to have a specific variety of grappa, you have to distill the grape varieties behind the wine.
Okay, and just as in wine, the character of the grappa is completely different depending on the grape varieties.
Yeah. Totally.
How does the distillation process go then? Can you explain that simply? I know it's a complicated process.
Yeah, it's actually complicated. I'm not a technician, but I can tell you we use both pot stills and modern column of distillation based on the type of grappa that we want to obtain. So roughly, the column allows to select even the most delicate and fruity and the flower aromas for super smooth and clear grappa. On the other hand, the pot stills help structure and complexity. So we use both and we mix grappa obtained with the two method of production. But all of our grappa have the same modern and approachable style. style.
Okay, so this is an important distinction. The continuous stills, the column stills, combined with the pot stills, mm-hmm. which need to be emptied after yeah. each distillation then. Okay, so right, very right. laborious artisan craft as well.
Yeah, yeah. My dad invested a lot in innovative equipment because his dream was to create a more approachable grappa. So that's why we mixed.
Right, I understand. And grappa is basically vaporized, or distillation is vaporizing the alcohol and then collecting it and knowing just the right amounts to collect neither the heads nor the tails, but just that middle cut of pure grappa.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Julia, I know one thing that's very important for the Castagnara grappa is aging. Now, tell us a little bit about aging.
Yeah, so from the very beginning, my dad realized, I'm talking about 30 years ago, back in 1996, he realized that aging grappa in barrique could have been the game changer. As I told you, he was inspired by cognac. Okay, so 30 years ago, grappa was proposed only as a white spirit, but then the producers started to age it in wood, and my dad decided to invest in a barrique cellar from the first year of when he founded the company. And he decided to age an increasing portion of his production in small oak and cherry barrels. So nowadays, we are proud to introduce our 20 years old grappa that he imagined in 1998. So we are thrilled about this launch that will occur at Vinitaly this year.
Okay, so this is a really important distinction, Julia. You talk about changing perceptions of grappa. As you say, grappa was primarily a white spirit, perhaps something, a digestivo that one would have after mm-hmm. the meal, or even a cafe corretto poured into an espresso and down very quickly, not right. a premium spirit to savor and enjoy thoughtfully. So this is something I think is important for our listeners to understand, that there are very different styles of grappa, and it is a premium spirit that is on the level of cognac or single malt whiskey, for example.
Italian Wine Podcast. If you think you love wine as much as we do, then give us a like and a follow anywhere you get your pods.
This is a good opportunity to discuss this masterclass tasting that will be taking place at Vinitaly on April 16th. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so we thought in order to change the perception of grappa, we thought it was useful to promote a comparison between grappa, or rather between what grappa nowadays is, and the more well-known international brown spirits like cognac and whiskey. So together with Stevie, we will attend this masterclass, and we will try to highlight the different features between a 20 years old grappa, a 20 years old, over 20 years old cognac, and the same aging of whiskey. So that would be interesting, because sometimes people don't expect grappa can be a premium spirit like it actually is today.
Yes, I think that is a really fascinating comparative tasting that will take place on April 16th. I think you're right to really emphasize these changing perceptions of grappa, of how we interact with spirits and enjoy them. But let's also turn to grappa and the younger generation and how younger people now are also discovering grappa. Tell us about this.
So the thing is, young people in their 30s don't enjoy grappa very much, even in Italy, because they think grappa is that harsh white spirit their grandfathers used to drink at the end of every meal. But they love to drink cocktails, right? So probably the best way to make grappa more appealing to young people is working with bartenders to let them include grappa among the spirits they use in their cocktails. Because when people try a grappa cocktail, they are always surprised. So probably the best way to approach young people is to let them try a grappa cocktail first.
Can you give us some examples? What are some of your favorite grappa cocktails?
Okay, I'm a Negroni person, totally. So I love grappa classics, like a Negroni made with grappa instead of gin, or any kind of sour based on lemon or grapefruit. So that a grapefruit sour or a lemon sour with grappa works perfectly. But the amazing thing is that back in 2020, IBA, which is the International Bartender Association, added the first grappa-based cocktail in their official cocktail codification in the New Era category. So that was an amazing change that will help us to communicate that grappa can work in cocktails.
Was that a particular cocktail they included in that list?
Yeah. The name is Vento, and it's a sour cocktail with honey and chamomile that work very well with grappa. You don't expect it to be made with grappa, so it's surprising.
Okay. You wouldn't use your 23-year-old grappa for making cocktails, though.
I would not.
No.
I would not. But we created a grappa. The name is Casta. So it's, like a nickname of Castagnere.
Yeah, okay.
Casta. And it was specifically designed for cocktails, for mixology.
Okay.
Because we strongly believe, as I told you, that we need to design grappa specifically created for the use. So if you want to mix grappa in cocktails, it has to be very pure and clean. So we distill this 85% Prosecco grappa. We distill it 5 times to make it super suitable for cocktails.
Oh, that's really, really interesting. So tell us your recipe for the perfect Negroni made with Castagnere grappa.
Yeah, beautiful. So you know that the Negroni works one-third spirit. In the original recipe, there's one-third gin, and you can substitute one-third gin with one-third grappa, better, my Castagnere grappa. And then you add one-third vermouth and one-third bitter. You can balance based to your taste, to your personal taste, but the original recipe should be one-third, one-third, one-third.
Okay. No, it's a wonderful cocktail with gin, but I've never had it with your grappa. So I'm going to try that.
It's even smoother. Yeah, because the gin has that perfume note, and it's it has the gin note. Grappa in Negroni helps the cocktail to be smoother. You have to try it. I make sure you will try it.
Okay, I think that's really important. Also, to think, we think of grappa as a digestivo,
right,
a drink to have after a meal, but to bring grappa into with an aperitivo, for example, is a different way of looking at grappa. So
yeah, of course.
I'm looking forward to trying that. I would like you to make me a Negroni when we meet.
I would love to. I would love to.
Okay. And do you think that younger people are enjoying and coming to appreciate and maybe also becoming connoisseurs and appreciating the grappa barricata, the grappa aged in wood?
Yeah. My point is that first off, you have to approach them with something they know. So they are familiar to cocktails. So you have to put grappa in their cocktails. And then you can add them developing the knowledge of barrique aged grappa, maybe working on their taste, working with the right products, but it's a process. First off, you have to, start with what they are familiar to.
Yes, I'm sure that's right. But I'm also sure that, not just for young people, but for people of any age, of my age, people sometimes think grappa is going to be really powerful and maybe a bit harsh. But
right,
when you taste a...
No, I would say harsh. Mm-hmm.
When you taste a smooth, wood-aged, quality, premium grappa, it's a real revelation. It's really something entirely enjoyable to savor and just enjoy. Now, Julia, let's turn to Perhaps what might seem a strange topic, but grappa and food, or pairing grappa with foods, or perhaps using grappa in the kitchen. I know you have some thoughts on this.
Yeah. So besides traditional pairing suggestions like grappa in desserts, grappa in chocolate, grappa in gelato, I also use grappa for cooking. For example, to make the risotto, I use grappa in place of wine. So when you add the wine at the very beginning, the risotto making, and you let it evaporate, I use grappa in place of wine. Or I use grappa to enrich the taste of my tomato sauce for spaghetti, because high volume alcohol helps to enrich the taste and flavor in the tomato. So I use this little trick of putting my grappa, a little bit of grappa in my tomato sauce as well.
So after you've started cooking the tomato sauce, you would add how much grappa?
I would say a little like an espresso cup, you know. Does this make sense? An espresso cup.
Okay.
In the boiling sauce, and then you let it evaporate, stirring slowly, and then of course the alcohol evaporates, but it let the aromas explode. You have to try.
I'm definitely going to try that.
It's the same principle behind pasta alla vodka, you know.
Yes, that sounds really, really good. I'm going to definitely try that, Julia. I think you've taught our listeners a great deal about grappa, but the best way to learn about grappa is to visit a distillery and see and learn at the source, to understand the land it comes from, that this isn't just a manufactured spirit that appears in a bottle, but is made by people with real care and hand attention. Can people visit the distillery? Tell us about hospitality at Castagnère.
So actually, we work with small groups of people. We are not very much in the hospitality yet, but we are working on it because of the, UNESCO Prosecco is a project that it's going on. But it's always possible to go to our website, send an email, and we will be more than happy to welcome you at our distillery.
Okay, that's great. Well, Julia, thank you very much for being my guest today.
No, thank you, Mark.
You've really explained a great deal about grappa and about changing perceptions of grappa, how grappa really is a spirit for now. It's a very enjoyable taste of Italy that is unique to Italy. And I really urge my listeners to explore and discover quality grappa and Castagnère grappa if they can find it where they are. Julia, I hope you and your family have a very successful Vinitaly. I look forward to meeting you there.
Thank you.
And I just want to have a reminder for those who will be at Vinitaly 2024, the special grappa masterclass details, the grappa versus cognac challenge, will be on April 16th at 2:30 in Hall 7, Stand A6, A7. So thank you very much, Julia, and I look forward to meeting you soon. Grazie.
Thank you, Mark. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ciao.
Ciao.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Wine, Food, and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe right here or wherever you get your pods. Likewise, you can visit us at italianwinepodcast.com. Until next time, chin chin.